It is Tuesday, November 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions faces questions about the Trump campaign links to Russia. U.S. President Donald Trump terms his trip to Asia a success, and a new film portrays the beginning of Winston Churchill's time as Prime Minister at the beginning of World War II. It's all ahead. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is testifying Tuesday before a congressional panel, with Democratic lawmakers set to question his recollection of contacts Donald Trump's election campaign had last year with Russian operatives. In previous testimony, Sessions has repeatedly said he was not aware of any contacts between the Trump campaign aides and Moscow. But since his last appearance before a congressional panel in mid-October, news surfaced that a former Trump campaign foreign affairs advisor, George Papadopoulos, had pleaded guilty in early October to lying to federal agents investigating Trump campaign links to Russia. Sessions spoke about Papadopoulos and aide Carter Page.
I would like to address recent news reports regarding meetings during the campaign attended by George Papadopoulos and Carter Page, among others. Frankly, I had no recollection of this meeting until I saw these news reports. I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting. After reading his account, and to the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter.
Sessions also defended his actions as Attorney General.
Let me be clear. I have at all times conducted myself honorably and in a manner consistent with the high standards and responsibilities of the Office of Attorney General, which I revere. I spent 15 years in that department. I love that department. I honor that department and will do my dead level best to be worthy of your Attorney General.
President Trump has strongly criticized an investigation by former FBI Chief Robert Mueller into allegations of Russia's role in the election and possible collusion with the Trump campaign. U.S. intelligence agencies concluded in a January report that Russian President Vladimir Putin directed an effort to help Trump's chances of winning and to undermine American democracy. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, just like we've seen with past hearings, particularly with this Russia issue, we've seen social media really revolve around what's going on Capitol Hill. So hashtag Jeff Sessions, hashtag Sessions hearing. We're seeing the names of different members of Congress become trending as they're speaking and asking questions. Lots of talk about the content of this hearing, with Sessions saying that he doesn't recall meetings that had gone on, or that he remembers there was a meeting, but not exactly what happened. People trying to figure out, based on those statements, what exactly is going on, if he's telling the truth or not. And among the people who are asking those questions are members of Congress. Ted Lieu, who is a member of Congress from California, who sits on the House Judiciary Committee, very pointed in his social media posts, accusing the Attorney General of lying under oath, also giving us a behind-the-scenes look from the dais in that committee room, what it looks like to see someone testifying before you. Now, conservatives are countering this with shining spotlight on another investigation, a deal with a Russian energy company that was made while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. They're saying that needs to be investigated instead of this Russia matter, or is just as important as this Russia matter. But it's this back and forth that we see as this committee hearing is going on, as the Attorney General's testifying, people trying to use social media to divert attention away from that to raise other issues that they feel are important.
All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Lebanon's Prime Minister Saeed Hariri says he will return in 2 days. A U.S. Senate committee holds a hearing on President Trump's authority to order a nuclear strike. The threat of jihadist exodus to Turkey spurs a security force crackdown, and detained U.S. basketball players are returning home from China. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Sleep deprivation has been linked to a number of negative health effects, including high risks of heart disease, kidney disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, stroke, and even obesity. But back in the 1990s, researchers found that total sleep deprivation, which is defined as about 36 hours of forced wakefulness, also provided clinical improvement in symptoms of depression. A new report, based on an analysis of more than 2,000 studies by researchers at the University of Pennsylvania, found that partial sleep deprivation also quickly reduced the symptoms of depression in 40 to 60% of those observed in the studies. The researchers defined partial sleep deprivation as 3 to 4 hours of sleep, followed by being kept awake for 20 to 21 hours. Depression is commonly treated with antidepressant medication and/or psychotherapy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the issue of sexual assault following some high-profile cases. President Donald Trump has declared his 12-day Five Nation Asia trip a success. En route back to Washington Tuesday, Mr. Trump said he made a lot of great friends and suggested the U.S. will no longer be taken advantage of on trade. He predicted that relationship will be fair and reciprocal. The president, without elaborating, said the U.S. sold $300 billion in equipment and other things and expected that number to be quadrupled quickly. The Washington Post said Mr. Trump's trip was designed to offer a vision for U.S. foreign policy and to reassure allies at a time of tension involving North Korea and the South China Sea. The paper's analysis said Mr. Trump offered conflicting versions of its Asia policy. Associate editor Ankit Panda of the Asia-Pacific publication The Diplomat tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he views the trip to have mixed results.
We saw the president deliver an address in Vietnam, for example, around a theme of a free and open Asia-Pacific, which is what the administration is effectively calling its broader strategic outlook towards the Asia-Pacific. Additionally, we saw the first ever meeting at a fairly low level, at the working group level of the quadrilateral initiative after 10 years. This was a meeting of diplomats from Japan, the United States, India, and Australia, forming a sort of concert of democracies. Of like-minded states that value the same things in the Asia-Pacific. That said, I think there is also something to be said for the broader undiplomatic insults that we saw levied against Kim Jong-un, and also, you know, just a broader absence of normative issues, including human rights and values, which didn't feature too prominently, even in Japan and South Korea, where I would say President Trump was moderately successful in reassuring these allies. We saw very little sense of a democratic solidarity or solidarity with these allies in the context of the alliance. A lot of President Trump's behavior did come off as transactional. So I think the assessment is mixed at the end of the day.
Does that give China an opportunity? One analyst said Trump is a godsend for China's rise.
There has been a lot of analysis that I think has treated this as a gift for China, the fact that the United States appears to be a little bit adrift. I wouldn't go that far. I think the Chinese did succeed in flattering President Trump in a way that resulted in a fairly smooth visit for him in Beijing, where uncomfortable issues ranging from the South China Sea to North Korea to the trade imbalance didn't get the kind of attention that many observers had hoped for. That said, I think China remains unable to fully capitalize so far on what appears to be United States adrift. Beijing's rhetoric and Beijing's actions continue to demonstrate a degree of divergence. We see some reports treating President Xi Jinping's statements on free and open trade, which China claims to support. Effectively, we see those words being taken for granted without a broader scrutiny of Chinese trade and investment practices. So it's far from clear that the Chinese will be able to benefit from this trip in the way that some observers have suggested. But certainly, as far as the comparative differences go between the U.S. and China, I think China will have something to gain here.
Ankit Panda said Mr. Trump's message to leaders at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation meeting in Vietnam represented a clear divergence from previous U.S. administrations that the U.S. is prepared to go its own way on trade by cutting bilateral deals. APEC, he said, is designed to pursue liberalized multilateral trade, and that represents a bit of a retrenchment. Pundit described the trip as overall a success simply because it didn't fail. He said the president showed great stamina and did succeed in reassuring Japan and South Korea regarding the North Korean threat. Well, Senate Republicans openly discussed expelling Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore if he wins next month's special election after a woman accused the Republican hopeful of sexually assaulting her when she was 16. Beverly Young Nelson cried at a New York news conference as she alleged that Moore assaulted her in his car in the late 1970s when she was a student working at a restaurant that he frequented. Four other women accused Moore of sexual misconduct when they were teenagers in an article published last week by the Washington Post. Moore held a news conference after the latest accuser came forward. He emphatically denied the allegations. But the issue of sexual assault and harassment in America is continuing to come out of the shadows in recent weeks following revelations about Hollywood movie producer Harvey Weinstein. Mike DeMish, founder and executive director of the Date Safe Project, spoke with International Edition's Lori London about this issue.
Sadly, not surprised, because typically when this occurs, it isn't a one-time thing. People have a track record of behavior that abuses power against others. And that's what sexual assault is. It's abusing power. And that's why the age part here is important to discuss. You're talking somebody in their 30s, and the people who have come forward have talked about being in their teens. And so that there's a clear, large gap in age there. Also, his position and what he was in the community, there's multiple levels of power that someone in his role could use over people and abuse.
So would you say that it's more likely in situations like this, when there are numerous women coming forward, that they are more credible than the accused?
Well, sadly, our country seems to require multiple survivors to come forward before they believe the first one, two, or three. And that's really sad, because imagine being the survivor who has the courage to come forward, and until more come forward, you're not believed. It's why survivors don't come forward often. When people say, why did people wait 40 years? Look how people are acting now when multiple people are coming forward. And we're in a very different place culturally today than we were 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or 40 years ago. And we're more supportive of survivors, and yet we still have a long ways to go. Back then, it was immediately often put on the survivor, and there was victim blaming, as there has been in this case, but it was automatic, with almost nobody defending the survivor back then. So it was very hard to come forward.
Right. He has called this a witch hunt, Democratic agenda, you know, you name it. But she came forward and said, look, I'm a Donald Trump supporter. You know, this is not Democrat or Republican issue. And she was clearly distraught having to relive it.
Well, and that's really important to discuss. Whenever you have a case of sexual violence, the accused is always going to fight back with more detail than the person it happened to, because the accused is trying to clear their name, and they could potentially say whatever they have to say to clear their name. So they will become much more attack-oriented compared to the survivor who's telling their story. So you get two very different approaches on what you'll hear, and it should not be a surprise that you're hearing attack, attack, attack. The goal is to sadly discredit the survivor, the person who's already been traumatized. That's the disgusting part of these cases.
It's really interesting that ever since the situation with movie producer Harvey Weinstein came to light and more people came out accusing him, and then, as we've seen, many more celebrities, the accusations have come in against people with positions of power. It sort of exploded in the United States. I mean, it started with anyone who's ever been sexually harassed or assaulted, you know, the whole hashtag Me Too. We're talking like this, not a reality that just started last week. This is a reality for like half the population.
That's correct. And one thing we need to keep in mind as we watch, for instance, the Me Too campaign, it's still evidence of how difficult it is to come forward, because many people who hashtag Me Too are in no way proceeding forward with legal cases, right? So while everybody out there is saying, well, why didn't they legally do this? Why didn't they? Well, look at the Me Too campaign. These are people saying this happened to me, yet I'm not going to the police. I'm not doing this because there could be a multitude of reasons. It could be that too much time has passed, but it could also be I'm not ready to go through that, or I may never be ready to go through that myself, and how difficult that is. And this is a great example, because in this case, the Roy Moore case, another person down in Alabama said the survivors should actually be charged with a crime because they didn't come forward. I mean, think about how sick and twisted that is, that if you're a survivor out there and you hear that, you think, oh my gosh, they're going to turn the law against me for what a criminal did to me. I mean, that's so sick and twisted, but it shows you how quick people will victim blame just to not want to deal with the reality of this happening.
Mike DeMish, founder and executive director of the Date Safe Project. He spoke to International Edition's Lori London. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. A new film starring Oscar nominees Gary Oldman and Kristin Scott Thomas tells the story of Winston Churchill as he becomes Prime Minister of Britain. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, Darkest Hour is generating Oscar buzz for Goldman's portrayal.
Why have I been forced to send for Churchill? This record is a catastrophe.
Let me see your true qualities, your lack of vanity.
Yeah, my lying will.
Your sense of humour.
Ho, ho, ho.
Your Majesty.
It is my duty to invite you to take up the position of Prime Minister of this United Kingdom.
It's 1940 and British forces are trapped in the tiny French town of Dunkirk as a German invasion of Britain seems imminent. King Edward VI, played in Darkest Hour by Golden Globe nominee and Emmy winner Ben Mendelsohn, calls on Winston Churchill to become Prime Minister. Churchill must battle not only the Nazis, but also forces in his own cabinet that seek appeasement with Adolf Hitler. Gary Oldman said at the film's release at the Toronto Film Festival that he hesitated to play an historical character that people know, and one who has been played in other productions by such powerful actors as Brian Cox in Churchill and John Lithgow in The Crown.
You're not only in the shadow of the great man, but you're also in the shadow of great actors who have played him. But I came around, I thought, what's the worst that could happen? I could be really awful in it. That's the worst that could happen. So I jumped off the cliff.
Oldman's performance has been generating buzz as a possible Best Actor candidate come Oscar time. His only previous Oscar nomination was for 2012's Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. Kristin Scott Thomas plays Clementine Churchill, who helps encourage the new PM as he faces cabinet battles over appeasement, even as Hitler's forces gather on the French coast. Thomas says the film shows that leaders, even great ones, are human, but can do extraordinary things.
What is extraordinary about Winston Churchill is that he was an historian, and so he had a huge knowledge of the past and could understand how things worked and how history repeats itself, and was able to sort of foresee certain things that... That is what made him an extraordinary leader.
We're facing certain defeat on land, the annihilation of our army, and imminent invasion. We must negotiate peace talks.
When will the lesson be learned? You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth!
This film does share some similarities with Brian Cox's Churchill. It is told from the perspective of a young secretary, Elizabeth Layton, played by Lily James, whom fans will remember as Rose from the hit television drama Downton Abbey. But Darkest Hour does take a non-historical detour when Churchill leaves his motorcade on his way to Parliament to take a journey on the Tube. That's where he meets several people who inspire his We Will Fight Them on the Beaches speech. Darkest Hour is directed by Oscar nominee Joe Wright and written by Anthony McCartan, who co-wrote the Oscar-nominated Stephen Hawking biopic, The Theory of Everything. Darkest Hour opens in U.S. theaters November 22nd. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Sounds like a fascinating movie. I think I'll go see that one. Well, that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thank you so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On his recent trip to South Korea, President Donald Trump and President Moon Jae-in discussed joint efforts to confront the grave threat posed by North Korea's illegal nuclear weapons and missile programs. President Trump said, "We cannot allow North Korea to threaten all that we have built. Our alliance is more important than ever to peace and security on the Korean Peninsula and across the Indo-Pacific region." North Korea's sixth test of a nuclear weapon and its missile launches are threats not only to the people of South Korea, but to people all across the globe. We will together confront North Korea's actions and prevent the North Korean dictator from threatening millions of innocent lives, said President Trump. The president called on every responsible nation, including China and Russia, to demand that the North Korean regime end its nuclear weapons and its missile programs and live in peace. All nations must implement UN Security Council resolutions and cease trade and business entirely with North Korea, said President Trump. It is unacceptable that nations would help to arm and finance this increasingly dangerous regime. As both countries work together to resolve this problem using all available tools short of military action, the United States stands prepared to defend itself and its allies using the full range of its unmatched military capabilities. President Trump observed that in the more than six decades since we signed our mutual defense treaty, our alliance has grown stronger and deeper. Our two nations symbolize what independent countries can accomplish when they serve the interests of their people, respect the sovereignty of their neighbors, and uphold the rule of law. The possibilities are amazing, said President Trump, for a Korean peninsula liberated from the threat of nuclear weapons, where all Koreans could enjoy the blessings of liberty and the prosperity that you have achieved right here in South Korea. Together, said President Trump, our two nations will handle threats to peace and security, stand up to those who would threaten our freedom, and boldly seize the incredible opportunities for a better, brighter, and more prosperous tomorrow.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.